Because if you don't know, you could put your food waste in the wrong bin and be fined one simoleon. Good morning, I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review, the show that catches you up on a busy week in the space of 1 hour. Seattle tears up all of its pot-smoking tickets. Is Hope Solo distracting us from the real domestic violence problem? And Cliff Mass says the Pacific Northwest could become a climate refuge, the best place to be later this century. That's right, Cliff Mass will be here in 20 minutes. But first, we're asking you on Facebook and Twitter, is Seattle going too far by making composting mandatory? Tell us what you think. We're live tweeting the show at KUOW. On Facebook, we're KUOW Public Radio. And you can voice us at 206-685-2526. That's 685-CLAM. Joni Balter hosts Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel. The Mossback Knute Berger is here from Crosscut. And Eli Sanders, associate editor of The Stranger. Hi, everybody.
Good morning, Bill.
Composting in Seattle. It's not just the right thing to do. Now you can get fined if you don't. A new law takes effect next year. Seattle homeowners found with too much food in their trash could be fined $1 per violation. I have seen this story everywhere. CNN, HuffPo, National Review, of course, The Guardian, Al Jazeera. The world is fascinated with us crazy Seattle liberals. And it has fired up our listeners on KUOW's Facebook page. Owen writes, what is next? Is the government going to spy on people and punish those who forget to turn a light off in their home? What do we think of this law?
I think it's pretty silly, if you want to know the truth.
I always want to know the truth. Well, on a going forward basis.
Okay, on a going
forward basis.
Let's stick to that because, you know, I worry about that. Mm-hmm. I think it's full on nanny state. I think it's also impractical and demeaning to not only the folks who would supposedly enforce it, but to the people who are being enforced.
Why demeaning and impractical?
Because we're grown-ups, and if you ask us to recycle anything around here, we're probably going to do it. And what is the image? I was watching the trucks come up the street yesterday. I was thinking, really? They're going to start digging around in these garbage sacks? They're not going to do that. They're just asking us. I asked one city council member about this, Tim Burgess. He said it's a nudge. It's a 9-0 nudge. That was the vote. But you got to be kidding me.
Okay. Anybody disagree?
I disagree. I am pro.
Eli, and I want to know the truth.
I'll tell you the truth. Here's the deep, dark truth. The city, so first of all, I'm one of those people who reads every single thing I get from Seattle Public Utilities and Ask Evelyn, the garbage police woman that the city has appointed, this cartoon character that tells you how to sort your recycling, because I am constantly confused and fascinated by what goes where and wanting to get the thing in the right spot. Anyway, they've...
Good luck with that.
I'm all right at that. They've also encouraged people who live in apartment buildings, of which I'm one, to become apartment building captains, a kind of emissary to the rest of the people in your building to nudge.
Oh, they'll love you for that.
Well, I haven't signed up yet, but I'm close to joining one of their trainings and going in and doing it because we're trying to become the greenest city in America. We're trying to limit our trash that we're sending down to a giant landfill in Oregon. We say and pay lip service to the fact that we care about global warming. The way that we consume and toss out our waste is unsustainable. We've got this great thing where you can put your chicken bones and your banana peels and your salmon skins and all of that into compost, and then it comes back to you for free as dirt that you can put on your, you know, on your kale plant the next year, and it's beautiful.
And Joni, we're only up to 56% composting, and the city wants us at 60%.
Right.
So what are we going to do?
Well, so they had some goal that they set for 2015 of 60%, and they looked and they went, oh my gosh, we're only at 56.4 or something like that. And so just this was one area that they could...
I'm saying we're not composting at the level we're supposed to, right?
Ask people nicely, and they usually respond. Instead of the whole nanny thing here.
Yeah, we've settled this.
Well, I agree with Joni on this. I think it's nuts.
And
nuts. Social media producer, Bon Huber, is here. Do you think we tweet Knut saying it's nuts?
Just make sure you put the nuts in the right bin.
I was just going to say, those are compostable.
Compostable nuts.
I'm coming over to your house to see where those went.
But there's the creeping thing here. I remember when the mandatory recycling was coming in, and I wrote a piece for the Weekly at that time saying, you know, I don't want the garbage Nazis,
Nazis going crazy
on this. And I was assured at that time, oh, no. We're simply going to go after the large commercial users. The problem wasn't the little guy. The problem was the big guy. And so to me, this is just that sort of punishment an intrusion creep.
Well, they're not really going after you, right? It's a dollar,
Let me come back to that. So, I think as a nudge, it's a silly tack to take. I think Joni's right. Education is better. Now, the positive side of it is, if you hate sorting all that glop, hate your, you know, frequent acquaintance with fruit flies and all the kinds of things that happen when you sort this way, and we do in my household. We're assiduous about.
Do you have a little bowl of wine vinegar to attract the fruit? Well, we do that. Anyway,
you have to get used to a different thing going on in your kitchen. The positive side is that by having this fine system in place, if you don't want to do this and can afford it, you just pay your fines and you don't have to waste a lot of time separating all the bits and pieces.
Mm. I'm just wondering about the mechanics of this thing. So it's garbage day in your neighborhood and up comes the truck, but the bag is tied, folks, usually, or at least kind of closed. And
TSA, security scanner.
There you go. There you go.
X-ray the bags.
See, no, this is where the way that you put your compost in the bin is not in any sort of tied bag. The compost bin.
No, I'm talking about if it's
in the trash.
The scuff laws.
You just drop it in your trash. You're not going to dump it on top of your garbage.
I don't think they're going to put it on the bottom so they can't even see.
So when Eli is the garbage monitor in his apartment compost,
he's power tripping.
He's going to have to learn how to undo those little ties very quickly in order to see what's in there along with all your private stuff.
By the way, I am voting for Eli for the, what is the title? Garbage monitor?
Garbage monitor. Right?
I'm a little surprised at the response, but on Facebook, Delling says, everyone thinks they have the right to screw the planet and it's none of the government's business. However, you do not have the right to destroy the planet because everyone else is your victim and this is exactly what the government should regulate.
I completely agree with this person, and I was going to say we give out $24, $50 fines for parking too close to a stop sign, speeding on a street in front of a school. Those things cause harm. That's why we have fines. $1 is too little for the harm that's caused by the trash.
Well, it does go up to $50.
For apartment and businesses.
Yeah.
For dumpsters.
Right.
Okay, what do you think of Gina's idea on Facebook? Raise the cost of garbage pickup and offer free compost pickup. Same result without the whining about being told to do something.
That's a great idea. That's exactly the kind of approach they ought to be taking.
Good job, Gina. Do you think most of the tickets will be written by one disgruntled garbage man who will include a sarcastic note to the city council? This is for you, Sally Garbage Bag Shaw. And all the tickets will be dismissed later on.
There you go.
We are going to talk about that dismissal of pot tickets in just a moment on KUOW's Week in Review. Stay tuned. I'm Bill Radke with KUOW's Week in Review. This week in a nutshell, we are going to talk pot tickets in a moment, but social media producer Bon Huberman, how's our tweets coming on composting?
Well, Jennifer would like to add from Twitter that Skip and Joni are respectfully nuts. She's with Eli on the compost issue.
Okay. In Seattle, you're not allowed to smoke pot in public, though you probably won't get caught. If you did get caught, you might not have gotten ticketed. And even if you did get ticketed, now you don't have to pay. This week, the city attorney asked the city court to dismiss every toking ticket. Joni, why is the city doing this?
Well, because, as you referenced earlier here, there was one officer who was, shall we say, not a big supporter of marijuana legalization and expressed himself. His name was Randy Jokola, I love that name. Mm-hmm. But he went out and wrote most of the pot tickets. They discovered this, you know, I think somewhere in the beginning of the summer. Anyway, so he wrote most of these tickets, and he had little notes on them, things like, "Attention, Petey Holmes," a reference to the city attorney, who was a big supporter of Initiative 502. And so the sense was that the tickets were being written sort of in a not the way that Seattle wanted to do it. Although that's funny if we think about the earlier story we were talking about. They wanted education first. They wanted warnings. And here you have this sort of semi-rogue cop who told the police chief he just wanted to poke the bear, which was one of his thoughts about this. And so City Attorney Pete Holmes went to court and said, let's dismiss everything through the end of July. But it's not like it's not like everybody go out and smoke in public. They're very clear. I talked to his press person yesterday, Pete Holmes' press person. Starting on August 1st, they are doing the warning thing and then the ticket thing. So that's what happened.
And the officers will receive extra training. The education component, I think, begins first with the officers now. And they'll be encouraged to issue warnings first, and then after they see a repeat offender, I think, issue the tickets. Which, by the way, if I read correctly, is something like what's going on with the trash. I think there is a warning system before you get your giant $1 fine.
Okay, so there's an actual rule out there that second pot-toking offense gets you a ticket? So there is something clear, so someone's going to contest whether they got a warning before?
The officers are now supposed to record their warnings.
Okay, right. Okay.
And also, if you don't put the pot out, they'll write the ticket right there. So if you're warned, put it out, and then you keep going, you get the ticket.
And woe unto you if you don't compost your the little end of the thing.
Yes. that puts out some methane if it just rots in the landfill. What happens to the officer who wrote the sarcastic ticket notes?
He's facing various forms of suspension. The chief hasn't actually, as far as I know, she hasn't actually determined exactly what it would be, but it shall be some sort of suspension, because you can't really go out and sort of execute your own political agenda. You know, you're hired to do a job. The law is the law, and you have to follow it.
And if things don't go his way with the investigation, maybe he takes a job driving a compost
truck. Driving a compost truck. So I hear everybody being okay with this dismissal of all these pot tickets, right?
Well, I think it's the right thing to do, because this guy sort of poisoned the well for that period of time because of the blatant thing. The thing is, you have to have a rule like this, just like there's an open container law, because you want to try and minimize people drinking or smoking pot in public, particularly since pot, the secondhand smoke around kids and that kind of thing. So you have to have the thing. But it's going to be really hard to enforce. I mean, we've seen it already. The smell of pot wafting through just about any part of the city that you walk through at any time of day is there. So it's going to be difficult. But
how are they going to take race into account now? Has the department said anything about that?
Well, that's one of the things they were studying, which is how they found these tickets.
Right.
Because one of the things they wanted to do was make sure that it wasn't unfair in that regard.
But what if, and I don't know whether they do, what if minorities disproportionately smoke pot in public? How do they figure what's fair?
I think what they want to do is kind of figure out if that is what the tickets starting on August 1st end up doing. They'll have to go back and look.
They might be more likely to be renters. I don't know any of this. They might, you know, therefore not allowed to smoke in their homes, which you can't do if you're a renter. You know, in some parts of the city, there's a homelessness issue. I just wonder how they're going to figure this out.
Well, eventually they'll be able to figure things like that out, because the city is looking to get an extensive new computer database system which will allow them to track in detail these kinds of race issues and other things. So I think that'll be an outcome of the kind of overall technology push at the police department.
The other piece of this is that when they passed the pot ticket law, the city council required it to be studied, I believe it might be twice a year or at least annually. That's how we found out about Randy Jokela in the first place. Ah. The council kind of belatedly noticed that these all trace back to one officer, but it was part of the program of studying to see whether the enforcement was fair and proportional.
Eli Sanders from The Stranger, the Mossback, Knute Berger, who you also find at Seattle Magazine, Joni Balcher, columnist at Bloomberg View, running down the news of the week with you. And related to marijuana, whichever way you voted on pot legalization, you can feel proud of your state this week, because at least we were able to resolve the issue without a single local TV reporter saying,
"Okay, I quit."
That was, again, in case you missed that, that was...
Okay, I quit.
Which is what happened this week in Alaska, where voters are about to decide whether to join Washington and Colorado in legalizing pot. This reporter, Charlo Green, had done reporting on the issue of legalization without revealing that she was the owner of a cannabis club. Well, she revealed her secret live on the air.
Now, everything you heard is why I, the actual owner of the Alaska Cannabis Club, will be dedicating all of my energy toward fighting for freedom and fairness, which begins with legalizing marijuana here in Alaska. And as for this job, well, not that I have a choice, but I quit.
And back to you, other TV anchor who was not prepared for her colleague to do what she just did.
All right, we apologize for that. We'll be right back. Pardon for us.
That's the new motto of the Week in Review, pardon for us. What better way to make your cause look respectable than announcing profanely that you lack professional ethics? Really did a world of good for the pot supporters. If the Alaska measure fails, Charlo, come sell your crop in Washington because your job options in Alaska will be limited. Coming up, we have sort of a good news, bad news. The climate is changing, but you are living in the right place. Stay tuned to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for joining us for a summary. You're a busy person, so we're hitting the highlights of the week with the Week in Review. Did that make sense, Joni?
Yeah.
This is what
Whenever you say week back to back, it does. Yes.
Thank you. You worried about the climate change, Seattle? Well, stay right where you are. This week, the New York Times quoted several climate scientists saying that in a changing climate, the Pacific Northwest is probably the place to be. Joining our show now, one of those scientists, University of Washington atmospheric science professor Cliff Mass. Brother Mass, welcome.
Hi.
Will you please assume that I'm a simpleton and explain why we're in relatively good shape climate-wise?
Well, there's a few reasons. The most important one is the Pacific Ocean. You know, we have this big ocean that's cold, and it's not going to warm up very quickly. And so that's going to slow down the warming because our air is coming off that ocean, and you know, the climate change is going to be delayed, and it's going to be slower. So that's one big thing. Hurricanes are a big issue under climate change, and we'll never get them because of the cold water. Another big thing is water. The climate simulations, the climate models that we run, suggest that we'll get slightly wetter here in the Northwest. That's in stark contrast to the Southwest, where they're going to be having a big water problem, you know, under climate change. You know, that's very emphatic. So we're going to have water. The temperatures are not going to warm up rapidly. We'll never get hurricanes. Sea level rise, well, that's bad if you're in Florida. Very bad, because they're going to be losing a lot of land there. We won't, because our terrain slopes up very steeply. And it turns out, because we had glaciers here, the land is rebounding. So the land is actually coming up in parts of the Northwest.
Hmm.
So if you go down the list of problems for climate change, almost all of them are mitigated here in the Northwest.
I didn't know about land coming up. So even our coastline is in, again, relatively speaking, good shape?
That's especially the northern part, the Olympic Peninsula and the northern part of Western Washington. It's actually rising. So you put it all together, and we're in one of the best places in the world as the climate changes during the rest of the century.
Who has a question for Cliff Mass?
Well, I saw somewhere that Alaska is the new Florida, so you are including Alaska in your sweep of the Northwest, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, Alaska is going to have issues, though, that we won't. I mean, they're going to be warming up very rapidly, more rapidly than we are.
Oh.
And that produces all kinds of issues, like the tundra starts melting and pipelines start sinking. And so there are issues for them. I don't expect a large amount of population to be moving up to Alaska. Well, I guess it's possible. Our area will have a lot of water. We have a lot of land. I mean, we actually have a carrying capacity for a lot more people than we have. And there may be pressure on us by the end of the century.
Sometimes you can't feel that on the highway.
Well, perhaps.
Right.
So are we the best out of Alaska, Oregon, Washington?
Down to San Francisco?
Detroit?
Well, I mean, it's really the area north of San Francisco into British Columbia, and that will be most favored. And the key thing, I think, is water. I mean, water is our is the big resource we have here for agriculture, for hydro. I mean, we're going to have it. Now, the only issue we're going to have is how that water is going to fall. And we're going to warm up, clearly, by the end of the century, which means the snowpack will decline. So, you know, we won't be storing as much water as snow. And so to ensure that we have enough water supply, we're going to probably have to create more reservoir or dam capacity.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be probably something that we're going to have to think about during the next few years. People are already thinking about that. Fortunately, the Columbia will probably be in good shape because they pull a lot of their water off of mountains that are high enough that even with the warmth of the global warming, there'll still be plenty of snow.
Mm. Cliff, I have a question. Will we have enough water to sell it to other places to help them keep their people in place
and away from here?
Well, you know, that selling water is an interesting issue, and the question is how you get it out of here. We're ringed by terrain, and so if we wanted to ship water to California, for instance, we would have to ship it over the Siskiyou Klamath Mountains. You know, there's a pretty big energy hit there. So we'll have the water. I'm not sure how we ship it out, you know, put it into boats or something. I don't know.
University of Washington Atmospheric Science Professor Cliff Mass. Fascinating. Cliff, thanks so much.
Sure.
So, and you wrote this week, didn't you, Knut, about the idea of us being a climate refuge?
Yeah, Crosscut was co-host of an event up at the Bullitt Center that was looked at a climate refugee scenario. And there's a tremendous amount of study that's been going on about the issue of climate refugees. You know, Cliff mentioned Alaska. That's one place where we're starting to see displacement. There are about a dozen indigenous people, villages that want to move away from the coast because of the melting and because of what that's doing to their subsistence economies and whatnot. So there are sort of two things. One is people in the United States who are going to be internally displaced either because of severe weather events or drought, things like that. And then the other thing is people coming from overseas. For example, the Pacific Islands, some of which are slated to disappear. Well, places where Pacific Islanders have already emigrated will draw because of family connections and whatnot, others. And so it's interesting to start to look at the patterns of where people might come from here. And it actually is something Oregon has done much more study of this. There are some really interesting studies about the Willamette Valley, you know, Portland and those areas, because that is seen as a place that will likely be a big draw for people. And they don't really know whether it's really going to materialize, or if so, whether it's we're kind of like a Noah's Ark for people, or is it something that just kind of bumps our growth by a couple of percentage points? It's really unknown.
So as far as we know, local governments aren't doing anything to plan for more people because we're going to be relatively okay in a warmer, right?
It's going to go slowly. They're
density advocates a lot more.
Okay.
Urgency.
And what I'm hearing is that TV anchor in Alaska who quit should have opened up her pot store here.
Right.
Long term.
Eli Sanders, Knut Berger, and Joni Balter with you reviewing the week's news on KUOW's Week in Review. Should there be zero tolerance for alleged domestic violence if it's committed by the pride of Washington State soccer? We're going to get into that issue coming up in just a few moments here on KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information. KUOW's Week in Review. Good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. Hope Solo, high school soccer superstar in Richland, best Husky goalie ever, I would say. Two-time Olympic gold medalist, Seattle Reign star, keeper on the women's national team for 14 years now, was caught up this week in the national argument about domestic violence. Joining our panel now, ESPN national writer based here in the Seattle area, Jim Capel. Hey, Jim.
It's good to see you again, Bill.
See you again, my fellow Husky brother.
Daily alum.
My fellow Daily alum. So, Jim, you are continuing to report Hope Solo's story. Will you remind us what she allegedly did this summer and why it's a big deal again now?
It was a big deal at the time, too.
Yeah,
and I
true.
Think that's been sort of forgotten. She was charged with domestic violence at her half-sister and her nephew's and a fight there. The nephew is the son of the
half-sister. Yeah.
And he's 17. And she's charged with a fight there with in reading the police report, it's pretty messy and it's pretty ugly on both sides. And there's some things on both sides. So it's but basically, she's going to go to trial in November on whether or not this is she is guilty of domestic assault. And in the meantime, she has continued to play with the Rain and also with the U.S. team. And that became a bit of a controversy after the Ray Rice thing. People saying, "Oh,
this is that NFL football player who punched his fiance."
Who knocked out his fiance. And it was sort of said that, "Oh, well, this was a non-issue because it was a woman." Well, no, it was very much an issue at the time. And in fact, I wrote at the time that she was getting far more attention for this than most football players get when they're involved in an assault of some sort. That has fortunately changed now that we do have some people do now get outraged when there is some violence involved. So that's where it stands now.
Okay, one more question from me, and then I'll open it up. But the NFL is now benching players accused of assault before they've been convicted. Why won't the Soccer Federation bench Hope Solo?
I think it's a different situation, and I really do think that, and as I wrote at the time, if she is guilty, I think she should be dropped from the team. I don't think she should be representing America on the field. On the other hand, she is entitled to due process, and we do not have a gruesome graphic video that shows what happened. We don't know what happened. I've read the police report. She denies that some of the things, and the family claims this. And I think we have to allow the courts to decide. I think that they can interview everybody, and then we can decide what is appropriate action.
Well, do you think the same thing for football then, that it should all wait till the conviction? Because if we're going to argue for equivalency, we should have maybe equivalency.
I think we should have equivalency. And I also, generally, I think that we should wait until the courts decide. One of the issues, though, is then, well, the courts can take quite a while to decide.
And then there are appeals on top of that.
And there are appeals on top of that.
And sometimes people don't press charges.
That's right. And also, athletic careers are very, very short,
yes,
particularly in football.
Yes.
And if you're making a guy wait, 6 months, a year, that could be the end of his career.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when we have some terrible, terrible videos showing, we see what happens, well, then I think we should take it on sort of case by case and say, okay, in this case, yeah, I think. And plus, he'd already been suspended.
But we're all sort of pressing both of these leagues to come up with rules that people can understand so they can then respond. So it can't just come down to you have video and I don't.
Right. But when you do have video, I think that plays into it.
I want to talk about gender, too. KUOW talked with ESPNW columnist Kate Fagan, and she said Hope Solo should be benched, but quit acting like her fighting with her family is the same as men abusing their partners.
It's a red herring. It's a way to divert attention from the core problem in our society, which is that domestic violence is underreported and underpunished.
Is this a red herring?
I agree with that. I think it's also, she could have gone on and said it's predominantly done by men against women in our society.
This is Eli talking, by the way.
Right. Yeah. So this is not Hope Solo is not an example of a widespread problem. And I think the point is strong that her violence was not even against her husband. It was against a family member. Also, I don't know exactly where to take this, but it seems relevant. In ESPN's reporting, it says that Hope Solo is alleged to have experienced domestic violence. So I factor that into the equation also. She's someone who is potentially a survivor of domestic violence.
But so a league should factor something like that in as well? Boy,
I'm not saying that the league should necessarily, but it informs my take on her story and how big a deal I want to make out of it.
But Adrian Peterson is not a classic example of domestic violence, that the man against the female. It's against a child.
Right. Are men, Jim, do you think men are using Hope Solo's case as a way to say, okay, women hit too, let's call it even and watch some football?
I suppose there are probably some people who are using it that way. I think some of it is just a matter of, the media gets caught up in a story and you just hear various threads continue and they get blown out, especially when it's a story of this magnitude. But I wrote back when Hope was charged, was you rarely heard such a fuss about guys when they hit women.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly that was wrong. And now I'm glad that we are going to, I hope, hopefully going forward, this will be viewed as a very bad thing among leagues. On the other hand, I think it is a somewhat different case than what Ray Rice did. And I think it needs to be considered differently, as all cases are. I think all cases are kind of different.
I agree with that. The cases are different. One way of handling it doesn't necessarily apply. The leagues, I think, have a responsibility to do something to help both the victims of domestic violence, but also the perpetrators. In other words, there's a way that I think they could play a role in helping these people get treatment. That's one of the issues. I mean, I've sat in a courtroom and seen case after case after case of people, abusers, almost virtually all men, and they always get up on the stand and tell the same story. This is a clinical condition. It's not just bad behavior. They get up on the stand and tell the same story, which is, I didn't do it, but she deserved it. Hmm. I didn't do it, but if I did do it, she was asking for it. And they say that even when they see the guy ahead of them who said the same thing get punished with a protection order or whatnot by the judge.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that I think there's a way that suspensions and that kind of thing are just a part of the equation. You have to do that fairly. But there are people, in all of society that need more help than they're getting.
And aren't we angrier at these football players because we know that if a man is punching and choking his partner, it's probably not for the first time. So there is a bit of a difference.
Well,
because people are yelling double standard. But it's not quite the same.
Well, but do we think that there was no other event at that house with Hope Solo? I mean, look at what happened. She didn't just do what she supposedly did. The nephew came back at her. Was there a broom involved?
There was a broom involved. There was a BB gun involved. There was a lot of back and forth. Plus, I think one of the differences is when you have a football player striking a woman, you're usually talking about a person who is much bigger than the victim. And I think that needs to be taken into account, too.
Jim Capel, ESPN writer, before you go, since your specialty is baseball, right, I would say, ever since I've known you.
It is a passion, yes.
Will you just tell us which is the real Mariners, the team that was miraculously good most of the season, or the one that we've seen in the last week and a half that made us say, oh, here we go again?
I think the one we've seen in the last week and a half is fairly similar to the previous one, is that it doesn't score. They have a hard, hard time scoring runs. The unfortunate part is that the pitching staff, which carried them so long and so well, just wore down.
Do you think they wore down because they were mismanaged, thrown out there too often, or they're just exhausted trying to carry a team that can't hit, or just is that a?
I think it's mostly physical. Chris Young is coming back from many, many injuries and hadn't pitched very much in the last 4 or 5 years. Iwakuma has had some durability issues over his career, and Felix. Well, Felix, I still would vote for the Cy Young. So I think McClendon's done a great job.
Wouldn't it be a story if the Mariners managed to make the playoffs, which they still may?
They still have a chance. They are 2 games back with 3 left. I wouldn't bet on it, though. But
ESPN writer Jim Capel. Jim, good to see you again. Thanks for coming
in. Good to see
you. On KUOW's Week in Review, back in a moment. Oh, by the way, I want to let you know what's coming up on the program. Seattle is America's fastest growing big city. We're going to grow more, maybe because of climate change. Who knows? Cranes are everywhere. We've got all this these tax receipts, so our governments must have plenty of money, right? That's coming up. With Eli Sanders, Knute Berger, Joni Balter, I'm Bill Radke. Good to have you along on the Week in Review. As I said, these are boom times around here. So this week, when the leaders of Seattle and King County came out with their budgets, surely they would be full of new programs from flush governments. Knute, did it work out that way?
Well, we have a lot of new programs from governments that aren't flush.
Oh.
It was really interesting because it points up some real, as Ed Murray said in his budget address, a paradox, which is that, as you mentioned, we have the cranes. The city gets a lot of its revenue off of things like sales taxes and developer fees, things specifically related to development. But the costs of running government, plus some of the expansion plans are making it difficult. The revenue streams aren't working as they have in the past. One of the things that's down is sales tax revenue. The recession is not seeing a big recovery in consumer spending. I think most people can understand why, because the recovery has been so uneven. The other thing is an interesting picture, and John Talton at the Seattle Times had some interesting charts about this that kind of explain what's going on economically, which is that jobs growth, we've seen a burst in jobs, but job growth is projected to slow down. Boeing is not hiring. They're not increasing. Microsoft's laying people off. So you've got Amazon kind of driving, new jobs. But a lot of people just the jobs that are out there aren't that great. And the cost of living is increasing. And that's true for the city as well as individuals.
What you're seeing in Ed Murray's discussion of the paradox is something that has another term, and it's not as sexy, but structural revenue deficit. That is what is happening to Seattle. The state is over-reliant on the sales tax, which, as Knute's saying, is not bringing in as much as it used to. That's partly about spending. It's also about where things are being sold, online versus in stores. And it's harder to get sales tax revenue when people are buying a lot of things online. The other piece of the structural revenue deficit is property tax being capped. And that's due to Tim Eyman's initiatives over the years. And so Seattle is not getting from the state, due to the state's structural revenue deficit, enough money to help fund the increased services that it needs to provide for this booming population, which ironically is driven by internet sales, one of the very things that's vexing the state in terms of bringing in money and the city. And so Ed Murray has offered this bigger budget that attempts to be more ambitious and meet the needs of a growing city. But in his budget, he doesn't propose any new revenue, which is the paradox of his paradoxically driven budget.
King County's
get the money.
Yeah, where to get the money? King County's executive said, hey, the legislature could raise that 1% cap, raise the ceiling on property taxes. But Joni, is that okay? Even though, I mean, voters passed that.
That was Initiative 747, and it's very unlikely that any other county legislators from any other county are going to go along with this. It was gutsy of King County Executive Dow Constantine to go against a voter-approved measure like this. It's more than a dozen years old, 747. But that's not going to happen. So that's one thing. And actually, just in commenting on both the budgets, Ed Murray's budget was kind of spendy. I mean, it has a lot of stuff in it. It has 190 new folks to be hired over 2 years. I believe it's over the 2 years. Somebody check me if I'm wrong on that. But and many of those would be police officers. But year after year, you know, mayors want more police officers. They can't afford it. So he's definitely embarking on an ambitious effort to more police officers for Seattle, but that's expensive. Absolutely. And so is a new Department of Education and Early Learning Department and a couple of new offices. So these are not bad times here. Let's not kid ourselves. Have you seen enough cranes to tell you that money is flowing into both governments? It isn't necessarily keeping up with inflation and population. That's what they're both arguing, Dow Constantine and Ed Murray.
Yes, Canoe?
Oh, and I was just going to say that the structural problem is also that growth itself carries a huge price tag. In other words, the cost of the growth in terms of the impact on city services. For example, homelessness, the number of homeless needing help is increasing. And the city is having to pick up more of the tab because the state is picking up less of the tab. This is true with King County as well. One of the reasons things like homelessness increase during boom times is, one, the boom doesn't benefit everybody. And two, they come here for the same reason everybody else comes here. You come to a place where there's a good economy in hopes that you can get a job or in hopes that you can get help. You don't want to move to an impoverished place. So the as you grow, you increase, and plus you're increasing costs of transit infrastructure and these other things, which aren't fully covered either. And so there's a way you're sort of trapped in the situation where you don't want to kill the golden goose, but the goose isn't as golden as you thought.
One of the people coming here in moments is Luke Burbank when we come back with the KUOW's Week in Review. Knut Berger, Eli Sanders, Joni Balter, and you. Stay tuned. KUOW's Week in Review. Good to have you along. Give us 1 hour, we'll give you the world. I'm Bill Radke, welcoming the host of the TBTL podcast and Public Radio's Live Wire tonight, Luke Burbank. How you doing?
I am great. How are you all?
Good to talk to you. You've been reviewing the week all week. What's one of your big stories, Luke?
Over on TBTL, I think a big focus for us has been the question of how much should we care about someone's wingnut views if they are pitching us insurance? Which brings us to the topic of Rob Schneider, who you might know from Saturday Night Live and Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, also Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo, a particular favorite of Knut's, I know.
Yes.
The Animal films, 1 through, I think, 13 of those they made, and, yes. Of course, The Hot Chick. So anyway,
Best
Rob Schneider.
Best known for making copies, the Knutinator. That guy.
And that character is actually the character that State Farm Insurance decided to reprise from Saturday Night Live for this commercial that they ran like crazy last weekend during all the football games. But Rob Schneider, it turns out, is also an anti-vaccine person, it would appear, based on his tweets. He thinks vaccines are actually bad for people. He actually seems, I've been looking at his Twitter account, he seems suspicious of the entire sort of pharmacological industrial complex. And this was really something that was upsetting to the pro-vaccine people, which I didn't even really know there was a pro-vaccine community. That's like a pro-gravity community to me. That's
right.
A group of people who believe in a thing that seems very obvious, I think, to all of us. Mm-hmm. So they got these ads pulled, this particular State Farm ad, because they put enough pressure online, I guess, on State Farm, who decided that there was no upside to keeping these, by the way, pretty lousy commercials anyway, which probably didn't help Schneider's
didn't
cause.
Help. Yeah.
So the question is, should we care about his beliefs to the degree or to the point where we would actually get his ads pulled because he has some, as I would describe them, wingnut beliefs?
Right. Guests?
They
all agree with Rob Schneider, yeah. So they don't know what to say.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of horrifying to think that we're talking about that. But the vaccine thing is genuine. No, I mean that Rob Schneider is like floated to the top of the conversation. I mean, I saw that routine and I figure the insurance company is selling insurance to old people who actually remember those characters. And
yes.
Those
right.
points.
And are too late for vaccines to help them anyway.
Yeah.
But the issue, you know, the issue is important. And I think a lot of people feel that there are certain celebrities that are talking people out of vaccinating their children and that that kids yeah, but are is dying that really, as a result.
Is that really Deuce Bigalow, European gigolo, who's doing that? I mean, is he setting the tone? This was my problem with the outrage. There used to be a minimum investment level for being outraged in this country, which was you had to like sit down and write out a letter and mail it somewhere. That bar has been lowered to such a low sort of threshold where being outraged just involves clicking on something on Facebook. So you can get these tempests going in this teapot that is the internet that I just don't think would have happened 20 years ago, whatever right. Rob Schneider's beliefs
well,
are.
So you're saying the like button that we all know about is really it's the only play. It's the anti everything else on the internet button, because basically the internet is a dislike button, but just waiting to be pushed.
Except a lot of like buttons are pushed on people's outrage, and then if enough like buttons are pushed, that's how a commercial gets pulled. I think if he was doing public service announcements for the CDC and this was in his closet, it would make a lot of sense. I don't know. I don't care.
But it used to be in the old days, say, just similarly, like for journalism, let's say you wrote something that somebody didn't like. You know, a week would go by, nobody remembers actually what you have just written, and here comes a letter that says in paragraph 3, you shouldn't have said this, you should have said that. It's got a different feel to it when it arrives that much slower. This is all so instant, but then it also just vanishes too. It's gone and mere seconds, right?
When people write me sort of angry letters and postcards, I save them. I have two of them framed here in the TBTL studios. One says, "Your show is pure piffle." And I have
that was
to
my
say,
mom, I think.
The fact that, yeah, and I did not appreciate it, Bill. The fact that somebody sat down and wrote something by hand actually makes me take it more seriously. Because they actually put the time in. I just think it's too easy to be mad, and anger is a very alluring sort of, you know, chemical reaction in your body. It feels good. It feels like something's happening, and I think we're just looking for reasons to be mad now, like at Rob Schneider. Who cares?
Well, I think part of it is that since everybody can broadcast their views to the world via social media, it used to be the crackpots had a P.O. box in Arizona, and you had to write a letter like I did when I was in sixth grade to the Flat Earth Society and ask them to send me their literature. And like, you know,
I knew it.
Six months later, the envelope showed up with all these mimeographed sheets in it, you know. People with crazy ideas did not have the world stage to pose those ideas right. on. And just as Luke, I think, astutely pointed out, it also gives the reaction for instant outrage. And that's why you need a pro-gravity lobby.
Yes. So, Luke, since you love outrage, let's see if you can work up something here. Remember the West Seattle ferry that was on the way from Bremerton to the Seahawks game, but it had to turn around because it was overloaded? Funny story. It was not overloaded. The Transportation Department acknowledged this week under a public records request that a hand clicker, you know, the clicker the ferry workers work as you board, it malfunctioned and there was plenty of room on the boat. Leslie Twite told investigators her clicker had malfunctioned before and she was so focused on watching the passengers board that she didn't look at her device to see whether it was miscounting.
Math classes for ferry workers.
This is an example where the old technology is not superior.
I take the ferries because I live up in Port Townsend now. I take the ferries easily 3 times a week, and I know all of the routes. I have the app on my phone, and I have a constant sense of stress and dread that I'm going to be the person walking down the gangway, and that person with the clicker is going to click over to whatever number they're supposed to be on, and they're going to go, "You shall not pass." So that's like this for these people trying to go to the game. That was my nightmare situation playing out. Can I, Bill, can I just grossly misuse the KUOW airwaves?
Maybe.
And ask the Washington State Ferries, can I please be one of the people who does the announcement over the PA system?
I did that, and they didn't. I have never heard myself on a ferry. I may not have been up to snuff.
You recorded
it? I record. They asked me to record it.
I hate
this ferry system.
I hate those. Hi, I'm a DJ, and I'm going to put on your life jackets.
See, I wasn't enough like that, and they didn't use it.
It's terrible.
Wow, have we gone off the rails?
I would absolutely kill to have that job. And I'm starting a Kickstarter for it.
Oh, good.
The other side project is getting Rob Schneider banned from the ferries. So we got a lot going on online. Everybody check it out at tbtl.net.
Hey, listen, one more thing, because we have a moment. Has anyone seen the viral video of the day, which I think we can all relate to since because of the weather today, the toddlers arguing about the weather? One of them, you know, like, the debate is basically, is it raining?
No, it's sprinkling.
No, it's raining.
My mom told me it's sprinkling.
It was raining.
No.
Yes,
my mom told me it was sprinkling, not raining.
Sprinkling or raining? We never, is it dripping? Is it drizzling? But the argument gets heated, and the girl pokes the boy in the chest.
It's raining. It's raining.
You poked my heart.
You poked my heart.
She is on her way to being banned from kickball.
Then I go get honey. And
her kid. She poked my heart.
He poked my heart. And that boy has poked America's heart. So if somebody hasn't sent or posted that video to you yet, they will. It's enough to make your eyes sprinkle.
Yeah, it sounds like us in some ways.
Yeah. Joni, you just poked my heart. Luke, you poke my heart always. Thank you for coming on.
Bill, personal message to you. In my chest, you're the best.
Oh, I know what that's about. Public Radio's Live Wire tonight, 8 o'clock. TBTL, always there because it's a podcast. Luke, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks to UW Professor Cliff Mass, and thanks to ESPN's Jim Capel for stopping by, and Eli Sanders for associate editing The Stranger so well, and Knute Berger, mossbacking as he does at crosscut.com and columnizing at Seattle Magazine, and Joni Balter, host of Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel, columnist at Bloomberg View, and KUOW's Week in Review is produced by Jason Pagano. So much to be grateful for. And thank you to you for tuning in. Will you come back with us and condense the week in an hour next Friday at 10 o'clock? Thanks a lot. See you then.